of you, and I hope you had a good holiday season. We have snow here today, so Vancouver is like totally going like, you know, bonkers because we are not supposed to have snow, and we do, and we are in, the temperatures are sub-zero. So anyway, we are now going to be starting chapter 11 of the Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna's grace, Gurudev's blessings. We started chapter 7 with Tat Padam Shodhanam, so a discovery of the self. In chapter 7, Bhagwan told us about his higher nature and lower nature. The lower nature is the Ashtadha Prakriti, which is this world, the five elements and mind, intellect and ahankar, or the sun, moon and the planets, indicating that all this world also is him alone. And then he has his highest, the Turiya state, which is beyond Jiva and Ishvara, Turiya. In chapter 8, he digressed a little bit because at the end of chapter 7, he used some terms, Adhyatma, Adibhautik, Adidaivik, Adiyajna, which confused Arjun. He had never heard those words before. So he asked Bhagwan to explain those verses in chapter 8, which Bhagwan did. And chapter 8 then talked about Krama Mukti as opposed to Jivan Mukti, liberation here and now, but in stages. And also there Bhagwan mentioned that whatever is the thought at the last moment of one's life, the person will become that. So obviously, if you think of me, he says, at the last moment, you will come to me. But it is not so very easily done. Whatever that you have thought throughout your life will be that last thought in your mind at the end. So if you think that I will be extroverted and think about the world throughout my life, and then, oh, no problem, at the last minute, I'll just take Bhagwan's name and I'll go to Bhagwan. No, it is not that easy. That Bhagwan's thought will not come to you. If you have not thought of it throughout your life, at the last minute also, it is not going to come to you. So that is the principle there. And then in chapter 9, he came back. In chapter 7, he had used the words, I am like the Sutre Manigana Iva. I am the thread in the necklace of pearls or beads or gems or whatever. And I am the thread. And as we know, the thread is not easily seen, but it is actually the thread which is holding all the beads in place, the pearls, the gems, whatever that you may call, that is the thread, is what is holding everything in place. So he says, I am like that thread because I am holding everything in place. And how is he holding everything in place? By being the principle of existence. And that is why we experience this world as is. So he explained the essence, that sutra he explained in chapter 9, but then he realizes that maybe not all of the listeners are subtle in their thinking to understand the essence. So he goes on to explain the mani or the gems in chapter 10, which is called as the Vibhuti Yoga. And I told you, Vibhuti is the glory. What is seen? Glory is always seen. So he says, when you look at the world, suppose you cannot look at the essence. Okay, you are extroverted, you're looking at the world. No problem. When you look at the world, your mind should come to me. And that's, therefore, he gave about 73 of his vibhutis in there, which we have explained in detail. So among the mountains, I'm Himalayas. Among the rivers, I'm Ganges. Among the Pandavas, I'm Dhananjay. So the idea there is that whenever you look at any entity in the world, the thought of the Supreme Lord should come. So he has now explained his essential nature and his glory, the things that are seen, that he has explained. But any knowledge, especially knowledge of the truth, is complete when you understand it from all standpoints. Because everything, you know, there is a standpoint from my side, and there is always a stand, like from my side, I was thinking that I cannot, and you might be thinking, oh, has she forgotten, right? There's always two standpoints. Why is Jaya not here? or has she forgotten that today the class, and I'm last 15 minutes I've been trying to get there without realizing that I'm clicking on the wrong link. So there are always these two standpoints. Same thing goes for the reality. What happens is we are a jiva, individual jiva and limited. And so our attentions, from our standpoint, first we are looking at other individuals. And when we are looking at other individuals, it is only a life of competition and strife. Because when I look at some other individual without the knowledge, without the background of the Vedantic knowledge, when I look at them, I'm thinking, oh, this person is richer than me, poorer than me, has a bigger house, smaller house, big car. That is the only kind of thoughts that will come. He's my friend or he's my enemy. He's more tall, he's more beautiful. That comparative thoughts only will come to our mind when we are looking at other individuals. Then slowly when we get into this knowledge, we are told to shift our attention from that individual to the Ishwara, to the creator. Because when you look at the world, you know that there has to be a creator, and neither am I the creator, nor is that other individual the creator. That much we know. So please, from that individual, you shift your standpoint to Ishwara, to the creator. And then with Ishwara, we cannot have a thing of competition. You're very rich, I am not. We cannot have. The only relationship with Ishwara that we can have is that of surrender. That you are all powerful, oh Lord. Please, I need this. Please give me this, or please give me that. So there is a sense of surrender. It is not a sense of competition. Okay, now this is from our standpoint, but if we want to understand the reality, we need to understand also how that absolute reality is looking at us. And that is what is now going to be achieved in this chapter. Chapter 11 is now we looked at Ishwara, we looked at the essence in chapter 9, and we looked at the glories in chapter 10. So from our side, we looked. Now Arjun, what he wants is, Bhagwan, show me from your side. What is your standpoint? How do you look at us? This is what now Arjun is wanting to know. And this is what he's asking. And this is what Bhagwan is now going to show him. That's why this chapter, as you all know, is the Virat Swarupa that Bhagwan is now going to show him. And that is what this whole chapter is all about. Okay. So Arjuna Uvacha Madanugrahaya Paramam Goyam Madhyatma Sanjitam Yatva Yoktam Vachastena Mohoyam Vigato Mama. Arjuna said, by this word of the highest secret concerning the self, which you have spoken out of compassion towards me, my delusion is gone. So what he is referring to is both chapter 7 and chapter 9 and chapter 10. He's referring to all those chapters, and he says that this, because in chapter 9 he used the word guhyatamam, secret. This is the royal secret, because the name of that chapter 9 is only the royal secret. So Arjun says that this highest secret you have told me, guhyatamam. We have seen the meaning of guhyatamam. It's better, best, good, better, best. So guhyam also is secret. Guhyam is secret about the world. So, because even physics is a secret to us, the laws of physics, the laws of chemistry, mathematics, whatever these subjects are of the world, they are also a secret to us. But they are gross subjects, and they can be studied. So even though they are a secret, they can be studied. If we have enough intelligence and interest, we can study them, and those secrets can be revealed to us. The greater secret than this world is the secret about the other worlds, guhyatara. So the secret, the other worlds, because we hear about this bhur, bhuva, swa, the seven worlds, and the seven worlds down and above. So that is a secret to us, because that cannot be seen by the senses. So for that secret to be revealed to us, we have to have faith in the scriptures. because we cannot see them or feel them or taste them, whatever, by our senses, they cannot be perceived. So that's why they become a little bit more subtler, and because of their subtlety, they are a little bit more secret, more difficult to understand. And then the highest secret, and that's what he says here, guhyam adhyatma san, guhyam. So this is the highest secret, which is of the self. That the self, that you are none other than the self. That is the highest secret. And that is what now Bhagwan has told him in these previous chapters. So he says that by this word of the highest secret, so you have told me this, concerning the self, and see the self is with the capital S. So it is the Supreme Self that you have told me. And you have also told me that it is me only, not that there is a self somewhere where which has been described. And why have you done this? Madanugrahaya, anugrahaya, out of compassion for me. Because I had asked you the question and you have great compassion for me. I understand that. And then you have spoken these words, and because these words have been spoken, my delusion has gone. Okay, this is what he's saying. Moha is delusion, vigata gone. So my delusion is gone. Here adhyatma is the Brahma aikya bodha. Okay, that's why guhyatamam, the highest secret is this. When he says guhyam adhyatmam, adhyatma, the secret about adhyatma, which means that the self in me is the self in all, and this self itself is Brahman. Okay, so that is the secret that Arjun is referring to. So he's saying that I have understood it, and why have you given it to me? Out of sheer compassion, no ulterior motive. Generally we will give things, then we have something in our mind and all, but that's not what Bhagwan is there about. He says that's what he's saying. Bhavya pyayo hi bhutanam shrutau vistara shomaya tvatta kamala patraksha mahatmyam api chavyayam. The origin and destruction of beings verily have been heard by me in detail from you, O lotus eyed Krishna, and also your inexhaustible greatness. So the bhava and avyaya, bhava and bhavapyayo, bhava and avyaya. So bhutanam, all the beings, the birth and the dissolution. And where did he explain this? Remember in chapter 8, you know how he said this one day of Brahmaji is that many kalpas, all that mathematical equation was given there, that there are these four yugas. Each the cycle of four yugas makes one kalpa, and Brahmaji is this thing. And when Brahmaji goes to sleep, like his one day is so many years. And when he opens his eyes, the creation comes. And then when his day ends, then that creation goes back. So that's where he has explained this. Okay, because you might think, where did he explain this creation and dissolution? That is what is being referred to here. Vistara Shomaya, in detail you explained. Okay, vistar, in vistar is expanse. So you expanded and you've explained it to me. And Kamala Patraksha, O lotus eyed one, Twattaha, from you I have heard this, O lotus eyed. Lotus has a great significance in our scriptures. The lotus, first of all, is very beautiful. So any kind of beautiful eyes, even if you see in our Gita Dhyana Shlokas, Bhagwan Ved Vyasa is referred to as big lotus eyes, you know. So it's very, that's the beauty of it. But the lotus stays in the dirt, and yet it is above that dirt water. It remains unattached. So that's a thing, significance for us, that we stay in the dirt of samsara, but we do not get attached to it, or we do not get tainted by it. So that is another meaning of lotus, like lotus. And therefore we see our deity standing in the lotus. You know, so we say lotus eyed, lotus feet, like that we say. So beauty and the feet, guru's feet, we say means because the feet are in samsara, but yet that samsara is not touching them, tainting them. They're not getting affected by the impurities or the dirt in sansar. Mahatmyam api chavyayam. So the greatness, and where did he tell his greatness? In 10, chapter 10, his vibhuti, his greatness, right? And of course the essence, yes, but his glories. So that's what he says, that you have explained everything to me. So all his greatness, we have started actually hearing from chapter 7, because from 1 to 6 was about all about the jiva, and then it was the tatpadam shodhanam, the discovery. First it was the purification of the jiva, individual jiva self, and then it is the discovery, right? So the greatness started from chapter 7. So all these 7, 8, 9 and 10. So the four chapters, he says you have, not he doesn't say chapters, we say, because that time it was not chapters or anything. But anyway, I have heard all this in great detail. Now he puts forth his demand. Evam etat yatha atyatvam atmanam parameshwara drashtum ichhamite rupam aishwaram purushottama. Now he says, now, O Supreme Lord, as you have thus described yourself, I wish to see actually your form divine, O Purushottama, Purusha Supreme. Now what he's asking is, I want to see your form. So this is what it is. Your form means, from your side, how are you seeing us? How do you see the world from your side? From my side, you explained how I have to see. I have to see the essence. The jiva has to see the essence. Then if the jiva cannot see the essence, then the jiva can look at the things of the world. And then, you know, go to the Lord. Okay, that's fine. I understood that. My delusion is gone. But what is your standpoint? From your side, what it is? So this is what I want to see. I desire to see thy Ishwara form. Okay, so this is what. So I told you, first there is a standpoint from our side, between us and another individual, then between us and Ishwara, and then now from Ishwara to us. Okay, what he says. This is what he is saying here.
Manyase yadi tat shakyam maya drashtumiti prabho yogeshwara tato metvam darshayatmanam avyayam.
Manyase yadi tat shakyam. If you, O Lord, think it possible for me to see it, do you please then, O Lord of Yogas, show me your imperishable self form. See how he has put the question. He is not saying, is it possible for you to show it to me? See, he's not saying that. Why? Because obviously it is possible. God is Sarva Shaktiman. So how it will not be possible for him to show anything to Arjun, right? So he is not, when we ask a question, say, you know, if you can answer, you answer this question for me. This is how we put it, right? This is not what he's saying. He's saying, think it possible for me to see you. If you think that I can even see you. What the hidden meaning here is that, you know, when we try to understand the Supreme Reality, means when we try to understand this knowledge, it is not up to us. It is, if the grace of the Lord is there, if the grace of the Guru is there, then only it will be possible for us. Up to a certain stage, we have to put effort, and that is in our hands. And what that is complete purification of the mind. Okay, if you take Gurudev's example of the pole vault, the athlete has to hold on to the pole, has to holding on to the pole jump up. But after that, all that support has to be dropped. The pole has to be dropped if he wants to go further. If you take it from the standpoint of the Yoga Sutras, see, Dharana is there. There are the Ashtanga Yoga is there, right? Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pratyahara, Pranayama, Dharana. Dharana is what practice of the mind to stay on one spot or one thought. Okay, and in Vedanta, it's always Aham Brahmasmi. Then dhyana is, it is in dhyana, there is no practice. The mind is staying there. Dharana is practice. Dhyana is not practice. Dhyana is perfected. Dharana, when perfected, becomes dhyana. Okay. But between dhyana and samadhi, that is now the Lord's grace alone. So we can only go up to dhyana and then we have to wait. And this is what is meant here. Think it possible for me to see you. If you think that possible means I am, if you think I'm qualified to see your form, if you think that I'm ready to see your form, if you look at Bhagavad Gita, see, Bhagwan did not start his description until meditation chapter was over, which means that he waited for the jiva, the individual has to qualify himself that I have purified my mind enough. I've done karma yoga. I've done karma sannyas. Now I'm capable of meditating. Now you give me the information on which I'm supposed to meditate, because now I have come to this stage. That is all self-effort. Before that is all self-effort. I have come to this stage. Now you tell me what I should meditate on. Same way here he says that if anybody asks me, I'm going to say, yes, I'm qualified to do anything. Am I going to say, no, I'm not qualified. I'm going to say qualified. So that's why I say, you tell me, you as the teacher, you tell me. If the teacher says or thinks, guru thinks that student is qualified, then that is real qualification. Student will always think I'm qualified. So that's what he means here. Oh Lord, think it possible for me to see it. Means, if it is possible for me to see your form, if I am qualified to see your form, if you think that I'm qualified, then you show it to me. Otherwise, if I'm not qualified, then obviously I cannot see. Even if you show me, I will not be able to see it. This is what he means here. Then, O Lord of Yogas, show me your imperishable self form. Show me your Aishwaram. Okay, this is here the disciple Arjuna is not taking himself for granted. See, he could have said, yes, I am qualified. Now I understood his essence. I understood his vibhuti. And he could have said, okay, now show me your form. Right? He's not taking himself for granted. That's why Arjun, Rujutvat Arjun, he's a very straightforward person. Okay? His questions are not to test how much the speaker knows, not to show anybody else how much he himself knows. They are out of a genuine curiosity. That's why the name Arjun, that is what is meant by the name Arjun. So this is what he says, if I'm qualified enough. Now, Bhagwan, as it is, he loves Arjun so much. And as it is, he has given him so much information. So is he going to say, no, I'm not going to show you? Of course he's going to show him. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Pashyame partha rupani shatashotha sahasrashah nana vidhani divyani nana varna kritini cha. The Blessed Lord said, behold, O Partha, pashyame, O Partha, forms of me by hundreds and thousands of different sorts divine, of various colors and shapes. So, basically, this is, you know, like now, because now it is going to be the Virat Swarup, which will further on be described by Sanjay as more brilliant than the light of 1,000 suns, 1,000 midday suns, not Vancouver sun, India sun, you know, 1,000. So he says that now you behold, see, I'm showing you, now I'm going to show you. Means, how many for that? Because you see, when we read the description further, we'll see he sees everything, right? All the births, all the deaths, the war, everything. So this is what he says, that see all these nana vidhani divyani nana varna kritani cha. So they are divine forms, and they're not just one or two, hundreds and thousands of forms. Now I am going to show you. See, now is what he says, okay? And then what are those forms? That is what he says in chapter, in verse 6. Pashya dityan vasun
rudran ashvinau marutastatha bahunyadrishta purvani pashyascharyani bharata. behold the adityas, pashya adityaha. That's the break of the word pashya and then aditya. Then the vasun, rudra, the rudras, the ashwini kumaras, and also the maruts. Behold many wonders never seen before, O Bharata. So we have seen this adityas, who they are in chapter 10. Just to remind you, Rishi Kashyap had two wives, Diti and Aditi, and this Diti gave birth to the Daityas, the Asuras, and Aditi gave birth to the Adityas. So there are 12 Adityas. I told you there are this, in chapter 10 also I told you, 33 crores is a mistake. Like we say 33 koti, koti is types, not crores. So these are the 33 types of gods, deities that we have. So we have 12 Adityas, 8 Vasus, 11 Rudras, and then 2 Ashwini Kumars. They are the, you know, the medicinal, the doctors, right? So he says, now you behold all these. And also the Maruts, and I also have told you the story of the Maruts. They were, this Diti, she wanted a son to kill the Devas. Just a reminder. And so she goes to her husband, Kashyap Rishi, and says, I want a son, you know, to so that he can kill Indra, actually. Not all the Devas, but Indra. Because Indra is the son of Aditi. He's the king of the Devas. And then Kashyap Rishi says that, okay, I will give you a penance to be done. You have to do this tapasya. But please make sure that there is no error in that tapasya. That there should not be. Otherwise, then it will not, this boon will not work. Now, when she's doing the tapasya, Indra, of course, finds out that she's doing tapasya. Why? To give birth to a child. Why? To kill me only. So, of course, he's scared. So he takes the form of a little child and he goes and says, I will help you in your tapasya. And he's watching her. And she makes a mistake. Some mistake happens. So what he does is, by his yogic powers, he enters a womb. And he, you know, cuts that embryo into 49 parts. Therefore, there are 49 Maruts. But what happens is, those Maruts, there are 49 Maruts, and then Indra is also there inside. So they look at him as his brother, as their brother, now, because they are all growing together in the womb. And so ultimately, after 9 months, she gives birth to 50 children. And those 49, they say, this is our brother now. How can we kill him? So that is the story of these Maruts. So Bhagwan is telling him, see all these now. In one shot, you're going to see them. You know, like not partially, part by part by part, but just one shot. Okay. Behold the wonders never seen before. You have never seen these before. Now,
ihai kastham jagat krishnam pashyadya sacharacharam mama dehe gudakesha yachanya drashtumichasi.
Now behold, O Gudakesha. Gudakesha is referring to Arjun. In this body, the whole universe centered in one, including the moving and the unmoving, and whatever else you desire to see. Gudakesha is one who has conquered sleep. Arjuna, it is said that he could go for months or days without sleeping. And plus perform. We can also go without sleeping, but whether our performance will be the same as we have rested or not is a question mark. But with Arjuna, even if he had not slept, his performance was the same. That is how it is, he's described. Therefore, the word Gudakesha. Gudakesha is used also for Krishna also, but here it is this thing. In this one body, the whole universe, now he's going to show him, including the moving and the unmoving. So, means unmoving means mountains and rivers and trees and, you know, all these things you're going to see, and plus all the human beings, animals, everything. I mean, all that will now come as a description. So what, see, in Vibhuti, we saw the many and we tried to see the one in the many. Now what is happening is it is being reversed. In the one, now he says, now you see the many in one. Because he has already said that
you know, this world is in me. I am not of the world, but the world is in me. In chapter 7, he said that. Remember? And what we said was at that time was that when he says the world is in me, means the world is dependent on me. The world cannot exist without me. But I can exist without, just like electricity can exist without the light and the computer and the bulb and the fan. But these instruments cannot exist without electricity. So that is what he's showing. He's saying, you saw the many and I told you how to look for the one, right? Either you look at the essence or you look at these other ones and I showed you. Now you, in the one, you see the many. That way you will have both standpoints, right? From the many to the one, and then from the one to the many. So you have both standpoints. And that is what is meant by this thing. And also in this Jagat Krishnam, he says, you will see things transcending time. Means what? Means you will see the future also. And that is why in this Virat Roop, it will come later, he sees the death of everybody. Dronacharya, Bhishma, you know, all these, the end of the war he sees, that he has won, and all the deaths he sees. And the reason is because Bhagwan is now going to take him beyond time. So when you go beyond time, then you see the past, present, as well as the future. Of course, the past you kind of know, but present also you're in the present. But future, how will you know? That's where he sees it, the end of the war, that we are going to win the war, but then there is going to be so much destruction as well. So this is what past, present, and future also Bhagwan is now showing him. Okay. Now this is this thing. Natu mam shakyase drashtum anenaiva swachakshusha divyam dadamite chakshuhu pashyame yogam aishwaram. But you are not able to behold me with this your own eyes. He says you will not be able to see me with your own eyes, right? I give you the divine eye, behold my lordly yoga. Now here, what we need to understand is what exactly is the divine eye? That part needs to be understood in detail. Just a general explanation I will give you today, but I will go into this verse next time. It will take a little bit of time. We have time, but honestly, I have not read this verse in detail myself. But what the idea is that, first of all, we cannot, if we take our, you know, just our sadhana, what we call the third eye, to understand this knowledge, ordinary eyes means just reading is not enough. Because what is the knowledge to be understood? Ultimately, my oneness with the Supreme Lord has to be understood. We can read it in the books. We are reading Aham Brahmasmi, Tattvamasi, all this we are reading. But that is not enough. So this Divya Chakshu is that type of understanding which will give me the bodha, the knowledge of that oneness. It's not like Divya Chakshu means, you know, like we say Shiva's third eye. It's not a biological freak, like there is a third eye here on the forehead or something like that. It is that eye of wisdom. Because there is one thing that the eyes see, but then the intellect thinks in a way. That's why we see the blue sky, and then the intellect, the eye of wisdom tells us that no, the sky is not blue. Or we do not see physically the gravitational force, but the eye of wisdom tells us that there is a force, and because of which I'm standing on the floor, on the earth. Otherwise, I would not have been standing, right? So that is what is meant by this Divya Chakshu. It is, which in chapter 12, it will come, Buddhi Yogam. I think we have had Buddhi Yoga, or is it coming here again? So this is what, and in this verse, that is the most important thing, the divine eye, Divya Chakshu, that Bhagwan is talking about, and which Bhagwan Ved Vyas already had given Sanjay. Remember, Sanjay is sitting in the palace and he is narrating whatever has happened on the battlefield. How he can see from the palace what is happening in Kurukshetra is because of this divine eye. And what we would now say, divine eye, is you and me seeing each other in the modern context with this Skype or Zoom listening. Okay, so I'm going to go back into this. I'm going to start with this verse. We have some time if there are any questions. I think this chapter is big, but it's going to go reasonably fast because there is not, there will be like certain things like this one has come up with this Divya explanations, but otherwise look how fast we came to chapter verse 8, right? So it's going to be, it's the first day today. So tell me any questions if you have, or if you want to ask me. And most of this now is going to be a narration by Sanjay. This is one chapter in this where the most dialogue. First chapter, we saw Sanjay Watcher. And now this chapter, and then 18th, again, there'll be Sanjay Watcher. But this chapter has the most dialogues or verses by Sanjay, because he's explaining this to Dhritarashtra. Any questions?
Jayaji, we learned in chapter 10 about Bhagavan saying that those who abide in me, you know, that single pointed, I will give you the Buddhi Yoga.
Ha, Buddhi Yoga, correct.
Same Buddhi Yoga that he is, it the same as the Divya?
Yes. That is what I was trying to think actually, because I was thinking Buddhi Yoga has come somewhere. That type of an understanding, this divine chakshu or divine eye, is an understanding. It should not be considered as a physical third eye that is being given, or the same eyes are becoming, you know, like some divine this thing, but an understanding of the matter. And same this in chapter 12, it will come. Tesham aham samuddharta. I lift them up from the sansar, he will say. And not that he's physically lifting the bhakta, the devotee, because that is fully devotion, the devotee, but he is giving them that understanding by which they will come to know their oneness with him. That understanding, and correct. And that is what I was trying to, it didn't come to me, but I knew it was there in somewhere before. And I know it's coming after as well. And here it is coming up as divine eye, because actually now he's going to show the form. That's why it's coming up as eye. Let's see that one. So that's why divine eye. But it is same as Buddhi Yoga. Correct. Correct. The eye of wisdom. Okay. If there are no questions, I will stop the class here and we will begin next time. Okay. Thank you very much.